It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the KSL Sports Front Page and the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. I'm very happy to be joined by Matt Park, the voice of Syracuse basketball and football. You can find him on Twitter at MattPark1. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Exciting news for the Jazz. They didn't have a second-round pick going into draft night. They went out and traded to acquire a pick. Generally, I think that means they're targeting someone specific. They liked somebody, and they said, hey, this is a value spot on the board. And they went out and picked a player from Syracuse, Elijah Hughes, who had, I don't want to say a weird season, but he had a good season for Syracuse. He kind of was a borderline first-round player, slipped to 39 where the Jazz ended up picking him up. What can you tell us about Elijah Hughes?
Well, he's a great guy, first of all, and thrilled for him and hope that it works out great for Elijah and the Jazz. And we'll be Jazz fans here in Central New York for a while. But, you know, his story is he's probably under-recruited in the first place. He winds up going to East Carolina, and it didn't work out there. He played as a freshman and averaged, you know, 6-7 points a game and didn't play a ton. Coach Boeheim remembered him from the original recruitment, and he comes to Syracuse to transfer, sits out for a year, which is hard. That's a setback for everybody, but looked good in practice and certainly was chomping at the bit to get going, and then played two really good years. Last year, he stuffed the stat sheet really like none other. He plays every minute of every game just about, can really score, and a fun guy to be around and a good guy to have on your team.
What was the expectation when he transferred to Syracuse? I mean, was the thought that, hey, this is an NBA player? I mean, Syracuse recruits NBA players. It's that type of program.
It is, but I don't think that was the thought at the time. I think it was sort of, you know, this is an extra piece. His best days are ahead of him, that he hadn't been used to his fullest at East Carolina. The coach, I think, that originally brought him there was not long for the job. And, you know, things changed for him at Syracuse. And he was given the freedom to kind of operate in the offense and have everything center around him. He was the understudy to a very good player named Tyus Battle for a year or so where, you know, Tyus was the go-to man. Well, then Elijah's able to thrive as not the number one, two, and three option because that's what Tyus Battle was. And last year, you know, Elijah Hughes is the go-to guy. Everybody knows he's the best player on the team and the person who's going to take the key shots and that type of thing. A little pressure alleviated by the guards that he played with last year and as much as, you know, Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim are very good shooters, that opens up the floor for Elijah a bit, but he's so skilled. He's got good range and can get to the basket, good free throw shooter, that type of thing. So I think the calling card for him is that he's a three level scorer.
Yeah, he's pretty interesting to watch. I've gone back now and watched a couple of games. And as you mentioned, there wasn't a ton of help at Syracuse last year, though Boeheim and Girard are very good shooters, but he had to do so much creation off the dribble by himself. I mean, late in games, it was give him the ball and let him isolate at the top and go make something happen. I'm curious how that translates. I think it affected his three-point shooting percentage, though, because it's only 34%, but you look at his shot and it's beautiful.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, I think he was around good people. I mean, the way that they practice shooting here and the amount of shot, I mean, I'm not around other programs day to day, but I can't imagine that there's others where they get up the volume of shots. And this goes back several years with whoever the kind of the key is that they come out on a regular basis and shoot between Hughes, Girard, Bam. They've got hundreds of shots up before the game starts, and that is an NBA mentality. The best NBA players are grinding all the time at getting better at their shot. Plus, there's 82 games and that type of thing. I think Elijah will only get better. I think he loves ball. I think he wants an opportunity. I think he likes to practice. So did he light it up, you know, in his overall average? No. But he had moments where he couldn't be stopped. You know, he comes out of the Georgia Tech game last year. One thing I think that probably is under-publicized with him is that he could have had his 40-point games and that type of thing in a couple of occasions, but deferred. And Georgia Tech was a great example. He kicked the door down. He made his first five, might have been six, but he certainly made his first 5 3-pointers. And the first four might have been in 2 minutes. And he, you know, he's got at the first TV timeout, I think he's got 12 points, and it's probably like a 12-0 or 12-2 game. Or maybe more than that if his teammates have scored. The memory is fading at the moment. But he had 26 at halftime,
and he
could have had 40 in that game. As it turned out, he wound up with 30-something, and Buddy Boeheim had 25 in the second half. You know, so they just kind of switched off on that particular day. And there were other games like that. The only games where he didn't play, you know, 38, 39, 40 minutes were – you know, the blowout early in the year against Cornell or something like that, he would come out. So he wants to be on the floor, and it'll be interesting to see him transition to the pro game. Obviously, there's so many different parameters there, but he won't be playing 38 minutes.
I think a lot of the trouble that college kids have, especially kids that create as much as he had to in college, is when they translate to the NBA, they don't have the ball in their hands anymore, and they have to operate as kind of secondary or just tertiary options in general. He actually looks like the type of guy who could probably excel doing that. I don't think he necessarily needs the ball to be a good shooter.
No, I saw a comment right away that he must be friends with Donovan Mitchell. And from what I know about Donovan, he's a good guy. I don't know why he wouldn't be. And I think Elijah's looking forward to seeing that. And it's interesting because we're about to get ready for the Syracuse-Louisville football game tonight, which is down there in Louisville. But, you know, there is a camaraderie there. He's not going to be a problem. He's going to fit in and do whatever is asked of him, and hopefully they can put him in position for his skills to contribute.
And he made the All-ACC team last year. Now, I know North Carolina wasn't as strong as they usually are, but Florida State was unusually strong this year. Still, to kind of get those accolades and be where he was, I think is a testament to how well he played last season.
Yeah, I think it was very clear all year that he was a top player in the conference, and Coach Boeheim stumped for him a bit to point that out. We had a factoid last year, and you can look it up, but he was the only player in the country, whatever the parameters were, but it was something like, you know, I think it was 18 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks, that type of thing. He was the only player in the country that met those milestones last year. And so, and again, he was the focal point of a team that had higher hopes than winning 18 games and had kind of an up and down season, but was capable. They beat North Carolina soundly in the game just before the COVID break. So, you know, he's an asset. I mean, I would have been great to see him sneak into the first round, but it, you know, as you know, it's about fit. And I think this is a great fit for him. He can go and maybe be a little bit under the radar and ease his way in and do what's asked and go from there.
What kind of a kid is he?
I think he's a quiet kid. He's funny. We talked to him early in the pandemic, you know, when we're just kind of bored and trying to make some sort of content and connect with the fans a bit. And so everybody had been home quarantining for a couple of weeks at the end of the season. Hey, what do? Well, I don't play video games, right? He doesn't sit there and waste away 8-10 hours a day playing Call of Duty like so many people his age do.
Yeah.
So he likes to be around his family. I think he liked to kind of just cook and relax and just be at home. And at that time, you know, he does have the kind of backyard hoop, but I don't know how much ball was in his life in the first month or so of the quarantine. And then you got to get ready and you have to understand, how does this draft get impacted by all of the stuff that was happening? And so I kind of felt for him and for all the potential draftees, but certainly a guy that wasn't, you know, a surefire lottery pick. This could go either way. How's he going to impress people? How's he going to work out and show them what he could do? Because the traditional pattern wasn't there. But he's a really good guy and a clear leader. When Kobe Bryant passed away, you know, that was a big deal for him. You could tell that, you know, he addressed that with his teammates. There was some kind of political stuff here on campus that he was involved in, I would say, you know, prior to the national Black Lives Matter type movement. And just a good, solid representative.
You can find Matt on Twitter at MattParkOne. He's got a game he's got to get to tonight as the Orange are taking on Louisville tonight. Matt, I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, well, it's 2020, so I've got a game, but I don't have to get to it. I have to get to a studio where we will watch the game and call it from there. That's how it works.
We appreciate it.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.